When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
And welcome everyone to another edition of Orlando Magic Pod Squad. Pod Squad is brought to you by the Florida Department of Transportation that reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. If you've been drinking, don't get behind the wheel. Instead, find a sober driver or catch a ride service. Remember, drive sober or get pulled over. Have a great night and drive safe. On this edition of Magic Pod Squad, oh, it's a fun one. We catch up with former Magic player, two-time NBA champion with the Boston Celtics, Greg Kite. He joined Orlando during that second season, played four seasons from 1990 to 1994. But we get into everything. What was it like when Shaquille O'Neal burst onto the scene here in Central Florida? Greg winning two championships, playing with Larry Bird, Bill Walton, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish. His interactions with the great Bill Russell and Red Auerbach as a member of the Boston Celtics. And, of course, what he's up to now, serving the Central Florida community. It's a remarkable story, and he tells some phenomenal stories. Don't want to miss this edition of Magic Pod Squad with Greg Kite.
This is Fonz Wagner of the Orlando Magic.
This is Cole Anthony.
This is Jalen Suggs.
This is Paolo Banchero of the Orlando Magic, and you're listening to the Pod Squad.
And welcome to another edition of Orlando Magic Pod Squad, and we are beyond excited to catch up with a good friend, Greg Kite, former Magic player, of course, 12 NBA seasons from 1983 to 1995, four of those right here in City Beautiful from 1990 to 1994. And Greg, I got to start with this, right? The Magic had opening night, season 34 for the Orlando Magic. You started in 1990. Does it seem like it was yesterday? Does it seem like forever ago? I mean, how fast does time fly for you?
Oh, absolutely. Time goes by so quick. And you love those days in the NBA. And it's like, boy, you wish your body could still do it forever. But I get excited even now when the season starts. It's that body clock that we have. Hey, it's basketball time. So it was great to see the Magic play last night. And they're looking very competitive.
Greg, are you one? And now some guys, when they retire, they don't watch anymore. Or you're still one of the guys that when the season starts, you're amped up and ready to go.
Yeah, I love watching games. I watch as much as I can. You know, oftentimes it's my problem is I stay up too late watching the West Coast games. Watch a lot of college games, so I keep up with the game a lot. I still stay involved. I help with as an assistant coach for a high school varsity team at a private school here in town, and so I stay involved with the game in one way or another. So. Never gets out of your blood.
So, Greg, since you watched last night, the Magic opening night against Detroit with our young team, you know, give us your thoughts on this young Magic team. What do you think?
Well, I think, JT, they're finally catching up. You and I used to run occasional four or five pick and roll, you know, and they just didn't run a steady diet of it. Now they got these 6'10", 7-foot guys. So I really like what Waltman and Hammond had put together, and they've got a lot of talent, athletic talent, a lot of length, and excited to see, the great job. I think Wendell Carter was very solid last year, got a good group of, pretty deep guards here with injuries. They've got, some good depth, but you got to love Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner and Mo Wagner and if the other guys, the other guys are contributing, good role players. So the thing I saw last night and the thing I've seen here a little bit in preseason, I think the Magic have really kind of lacked a little bit of a number one and a number two scoring punch, and that may be developing. Kind of has those two guys that's 18, 20, 22 points from those guys. So that's going to make a difference, because how it goes down the stretch. You need that guy who can create his own shot if the flow doesn't get it.
Greg, how about Paolo? Give us your thoughts on Paolo. We're blown away with him. And then, of course, the dunk last night. I mean, did that bring you out of your chair like it did for us?
That did, yeah. First of all, the dunk, that reminded me of my inaugural game as a rookie in Cleveland with the Celtics. And my dunk, unfortunately, it was during warmups and the ball boy didn't want to take a charge. He was scared. So no, I could dunk, but never like Paulo did. He was something. You know, the great thing about him that I see, when he's got a great feel for the game, seems like a great kid, very, you know, good basketball intelligence, but he's got an NBA ready body, you know, and he's 6'10", he's got these great skills, you know, just shoot a bunch of threes, go to his strength, go to the basket, get him in the mid post, get him at the elbow. And he's a great pickup. I really like him. You know, I like that NBA ready body too, because I think he's got that strength and build that, you know, you never know about injuries, you get wear and tear, but he's probably more durable now and ready to take the banging and the grind. So I love it. Like what I'm seeing. Great to have, you know, this length like Bol Bol, Mo Bamba made strides last year. I thought Wendell Carter is so valuable and he's done a great job. And so it's exciting. I think they're definitely on the way up.
JT, your guy's on it. Your guy watches the team. He knows the roster. That's impressive.
Always prepared, always ready to step in if need be. You know, you need some commentary. Just bring him into the game. Get him to talk to people. You know, unbelievable. So
yeah, I just don't have all the salary cap data, so I'm not sure how it makes it. You know, the mid-season trade or.
I can get you that.
We can work on that. Sure. So.
We can make that happen.
Does it amaze you, Greg, when you see all these young guys? I mean, think about it. Paolo is 19 years old. You talked about he's got an NBA-ready body. You know, just the guys coming in so young, and they are so skilled. It's just really amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's you know, it's really kind of changed the last 20, 30 years. You know, the guys, even down into high school level, I work with these kids in high school and some middle school kids, and they've, you know, they're working with personal trainers and they've really worked on a lot of individual skill work. Sometimes we don't see, unfortunately, sometimes we don't see with the basketball system, maybe the basketball team IQ and the skills and working together and playing as a team with some young players, but certainly these guys like Paulo and these other guys are coming to the NBA. They have that, or they're learning that, learning to play together and learning to, play the game as a team. But it is really amazing as young as guys are, you know, that the league has gotten younger. And it's great what they've done too. I love it. You know, that G League is like a AAA baseball is now. So you got this alternative and where guys can go and develop. And, you know, maybe they're not the first round number one pick, but they could be have a nice long-term NBA career and get a chance to get some minutes. Down in the G League and then come on up and help teams.
Greg and JT, you can comment on this too. There was a time, did you ever think there was a time last night where we had on the floor Bol Bol, Mo Bamba, Franz Wagner, Paolo Banchero. I mean, four guys that are 6'10 or taller all on the floor at the same time. Back in the 80s, that just would never happen. Did you ever think you would see something like this?
Greg, what do you think?
I think length and size per position has always been a big thing in NBA. Always wins. You know, you look at Magic Johnson, you look at Clyde Drexler, you look at the big point guards. You know, I went to the Celtics and here I'm 6'11", but I've got kind of average length. My wingspan's about 7 feet, but I've got Kevin McHale, who's just as tall as me or even a little bit shorter, can reach 5 inches higher than I can, you know. Cedric Maxwell, long arms, Dennis Johnson, Robert Parrish, Bill Walton, on and on. So, you know, when you put that with that's the game's not played with the top of your head, you know, it's played with where you reach to. And so being able to get off shots, be able to get the rebound, get that extra ball, huge advantage, you know. And now these guys, a lot of them have the mobility and the skill to not only, you know, clog up space, but also to handle the ball on the perimeter, to shoot on the perimeter, and because that's just kind of where the game's gone. Not that guys in the 80s couldn't shoot the heck out of it, but there's just a philosophy was you weren't going to shoot as many threes and spread the floor. So They've developed their skills and, you know, to meet the style of play and the rules. But, you know, you look back, some of the great teams, like we played the Rockets in the finals You know, the Celtics were big in 86, and the Rockets had Hakeem, Ralph Sampson, Robert Reed, 6'8 at a guard, you know, some other big guys who are guards, perimeter guys were long arms. So it's a formula that's always won throughout the NBA, and so it's awesome to see the Magic have it.
Well, so Greg, so you've started down the road now. You've been talking about your Celtic teams and everything. So Dante is just itching to talk to you about the Celtics and everything. But, you know, you bring up a great point. You think about your those Celtics teams of the early 80s. You know, you're throwing out, you know, Bird and, you know, McHale and Parrish. And, you know, Danny Ainge was 6'4", 6'5", right? DJ was 6'4". You know, they were big, long teams back then.
Absolutely. You know, and you had bigger, stronger guards because, you know, you had the hand check rule, you know, so a guy like Derek Harper would go up and squeeze a guard's waist and slow him down. You know, you had the water bug game changer, a Spud Webb or something like that, or, you know, coming and certainly was effective. But, you know, with the rule changes, what was in the early 80s defensively, where you can't impede a guy's progress, it really opened it up to the guy who could, you know, who's a little bit smaller, jet down the floor. But yes, the lineups were big and strong overall all back then. Like you said, all of our starters were 6'4", 6'5", and up, and many of them with long, great reach.
Greg, so take us back. So 1983, right? You're drafted out of BYU. You're going to the Boston Celtics. What did you know about the Celtics? What did you – Your first thoughts as you're introduced to Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish?
So draft day, I'm here in Orlando, down at my in-laws' house, down in the Conway area. My wife, Jenny, grew up here. Her parents grew up here. So we met back in college at BYU. She played on the women's team, and this was we were married by then. And so we were excited to go to Celtics. Her dad was a big Celtics fan. I had grown up in Houston, and I'd watched Moses say that he could beat them, you know, in four games, four straight with four guys from Petersburg and stuff like that. But, obviously the Celtics were, you know, hey, we're talking the Dodgers and the Yankees, you know, the Lakers, Celtics, we're talking the, you know, the legacy of the NBA. So I was extremely excited. Danny was already there. Ainge, we'd been teammates for 2 years. So that was a nice plus in college. So that was a nice plus. You know, and I get there, and I played against guys, you know, in college and even in high school back in Houston. I'd go to play pickup games with some of the Rockets and the NBA guys. So it wasn't like it was new to play against great, talented guys. But I remember sitting there in training camp and kind of pinching myself and going, hey, you know what? I'm here with Bird and McHale and Parrish and practice every day. I'm going, wow, this is something. And then one of our first exhibition games, we played the Sixers. And, you know, it's like between 6 and 7 players out shooting around before the formal team warmups. And Doc comes out, Dr. J comes out, and he says, hi, Greg. And I'm like, whoa, he knows my name.
That's so awesome.
You know, there was a little bit of that the first year. But, I mean, I was so blessed to be on that Celtics team. Quinn Buckner and ML Carr were veterans on the bench. And those guys have been in the league for 10 years, have been good players with other teams and even all-stars. And they told me and the other rookie, Carlos Clark, they said, you know, we're getting to the finals, going deep in the playoffs. And he said, enjoy this rookie. This doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
It was the first time for those guys in their, you know, 10 year plus career. And then I was blessed to be there. First 4 years, we went to the NBA finals, you know, 1 in 84 and 1 in 86 and lost. And being part of that Magic Bird era, you know, you look at games being, you know, not long before that game, in the finals being tape delayed and just the NBA exploded with them, you know, tail end of Dr. J and Kareem's career and then Michael Jordan and then Jeff Turner and Greg Kite come along, you know, too. And the NBA just takes
changed off. Changed the game. Changed the game.
And under that's exactly right.
Yep. You know, and you look at where they are now, you know, it's just really, that's kind of the year where it took off. And I saw the, some 30 for 30 or something about the Celtics and Lakers, and they noted and realized that, you know, every year during the 80s, either the Celtics or Lakers or both of them were in NBA finals. So, yes. You know, talk about the iconic franchises. I really think that set the stage for what we see with the NBA today and the great vision of David Stern with worldwide expansion when they opened up the you know, the Olympics to professionals instead of amateurs, 92 with the Dream Team. So it's an awesome, you know, worldwide game. And we've got, I know, Jeff, when you and I played, what were there probably 10 guys in the league who were international players? You know, now it's probably, I guess, 100 or something like that. So it's
120 this year on opening night rosters.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Greg, and talk about the
so much interest.
Talk about the 86 team a little bit. You know, a lot of people felt like that was one of the greatest teams ever assembled. What were you guys, 63-19 in the regular season? The addition of Bill Walton to the – that had to be a change in the locker room. Quite an interesting addition.
It was. Bill was great. Bill's one of my favorite people of all time. If you love broadcasting, you got to stay up late and watch those Pac-10 games when Bill talks.
Yes.
Bill's such a smart guy. He's funny. We had a lot of fun with him, you know, and amazing what he's done with his career. You know, he used to stutter a lot, and then post-career he got into where he got – took care of that and got into broadcasting. But, you know, when we had, obviously, the people we talked about earlier, they made the trade to the Clippers for Cedric Maxwell for Bill Walton. And Bill had been in the league about 13 years, but because of his injuries, he played maybe equivalent about 4 years. And he had double-digit surgeries over the years on his knees and on his feet. And even at that, Bill, when he came in, I've never been around anybody who had better timing on rebounds than Bill. I mean, he'd get the ball the second he came off the rim and an incredible passer. And so to add Bill and for him to be healthy there in 86, and we picked up Jerry Seasting, who had been a good player in Indiana. I had myself, Sam Vincent, Rick Carlisle, Scott Wedman off the bench. And so we had a lot of fun. In those practices, there's a great book Dan Shaughnessy wrote about that era that recently came out. And the title of that book was "We Wish It Would Never Have Ended," I think is what he titled it. And we did. But, you know, we had good teams the years before, but I have no doubt that was one of the best teams in NBA history, maybe other than the preseason team that Jeff and I had in September and October when we were really good in preseason practices. That was, but a kid, but,
We were the original Mr. Octobers.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, yeah. Forget about Reggie Jackson. We knew when to peak. We knew when to peak. But we only lost one game at home. And like you said, and one of our goals, I've never heard another NBA team talk about this. Probably they're out there, but one of our goals was never to lose two games in a row. And I think we did that the whole regular season. I think the last two games or something, or two of the last three, we lost two in a row, but things were wrapped up, and they were resting. Some they were letting me play more, basically. And Sam and David Third killing. So we lost a couple of games down the end, but then we went to the playoffs, and we were rolling through the playoffs. The only series I think we lost to in was against the Rockets. So it was incredible. It's one of the best passing teams ever. I mean, you see clips of that, and just a lot of fun to play on, a lot of fun to be a part of.
Well, growing up watching that team, that is the greatest team of all time, in my opinion, that 86 Celtics team. And I'll die on that hill. I have no problem with that. But you mentioned Dan Shaughnessy, right? So Dan Shaughnessy, he writes that book and he says how he lost a free throw shooting contest to Larry Bird. Larry Bird wore the money in his sock the entire game that night, right? So you hear, growing up watching you guys, I don't know that we knew that Bird was this trash talker that we hear now. You obviously knew it, right? How much did you hear, and what are some of the
and how much did you take? How much did you take, Greg? Like, were you just the brunt of the trash talking during practices sometimes, or
no?
Did he share the wealth?
There's a little bit in practice and stuff, but you know, like we'd scrimmage in practice, green team with green was the backups against the white. We'd keep scoring on the chalkboard in the locker room, you know, how many times we beat them. And then they would cheat and they'd erase it. So they those guys were tired, though, during practice. But it was very competitive. But, no, a lot of give and take, a lot of fun with on the team. But certainly hear Larry talk to other guys, and then you go watch some of these videotapes, you know, like telling guys, you know, telling the coach, you know, that, hey, you hit a couple of jumpers. Hey, you need to call timeout. or, you know, you don't have anybody over there to guard me, or some guy's closing out on his jumper. And depending on his size or age, it was either as the jumper's going up, it was either too late, too little, too small, you know, too slow, too old. And
that's great.
Larry was awesome. And you know what, though? The trash talking you did, it wasn't macho bravado, and Kevin was awesome at it too. It was really kind of Kevin used to call it stealing the other guy's brainwaves. You know, they were trying to get in their head a little bit. So, and I also think with Larry a little bit, it was probably how he got into his mindset in the game. You know, he's out there playing and he's focused. He's got a great mental toughness, but you know, if he could have a little fun and rag the other guy. That was all for him, but there was some, you know, not just him, but there was some awesome stuff. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the clip of the 84 series with Cedric Maxwell, who would do this today. You know, James Worthy misses a free throw in the clutch.
Yes.
Max walks from one lane slot to the other doing this, you know, and Mel's talking to Max before, I mean, talking to Worthy before the free throw. And so, you know, no malice intended, but it's competition. It's getting, you know, it's a game. It's getting into the, you know, in baseball, they throw it near your chin, or they slide with spikes up, you know, in golf, they can't do anything. In football, I'm sure there's a lot of guys who talk, but it's that's really a lot of fun. And there was even stuff like Cedric Maxwell used to go out, and he would, one of his heroes was Dan Rounfield. He really admired Dan, and Dan would always have wristbands on or an elbow pad or knee pads. And Cedric was a joker. So Cedric would go out and see what Dan was wearing for accompaniments during pregame warmups. And he'd go back in the locker room and match him. all of his injuries. And,
that's great. All I ever wanted to do in life was do to George what Kevin McHale did to Kurt Rambis. It's all I ever wanted to do.
Oh. Hey, there's still time. I'm right here.
You mean right a common foul, take the ball out of bounds on the sideline?
Right.
Isn't that amazing? Is that what that was? Was that a common foul?
That's all that was. I don't think they weren't even the bonus. They just took the ball out of bounds and the guys stayed in the game. And
of course they did.
You know, right now, what would they be suspended for?
A month. They'd be suspended for a month.
Forget it. Fines and jail time.
Jail time.
And, you know, that really wasn't Kevin's. That wasn't Kevin's personality MO. And yeah. I don't think Kevin was trying to foul him. I just think with Kurt going full speed this way and Kevin going full speed that way, he just caught him and you know, flipped him almost head over heels, and Kurt got up and was going to kill somebody, and he got held back or something. But it was, the stuff that was allowed was definitely different, you know, in those days. But that was a series changer. In fact, I think it was we lost the game before, and the Lakers looked like they're on the path to, you know, blow us out and run us out and at the gym in the next few games. And Larry got on people about being. Yeah. About the rest of the guys on the team being sissies in the media.
I remember that.
But you know, those days with the rules. So you play with the rules. The rules are okay. Make a guy shoot free throws. I mean, you still see it with the old Hack-a-Shaq or Hack-a-Dwight or whoever's a poor free throw shooter a little bit. But it was, hey, make that guy think about it. You know, or don't give him a wide open layup. And sometimes it resulted in, you know. And of course, you didn't want your starters, you know, going and doing that in the first quarter. So it was, you know, Greg Kite or Carlos Clark come into the game and Artis Gilmore and George Gervin are killing us. So you know, if they're going up strong, take a foul.
That's awesome. That's great.
And it also got the opposing coach, you know, the referees are quick to call fouls on the guys that come in off the bench. Because it gets the opposing coach off their back, because you know, but definitely, it was quite a hit, quite a hit.
You know, I think about with this Celtics team, Greg. Did you have any interaction with Bill Russell when you were there? Did you have any? Did you play for him in Sacramento? I was trying to remember that as well. What was your interaction like with
Bill? I did. Yeah. So the year before I joined the Magic, and that's a funny story we'll have to talk about too. Is Zelma signed with the Magic was I played for Sacramento, and Bill was the general manager then. So he's the person who offered the contract to us and signed it. But I didn't see Bill a lot then. He was playing golf a lot, I think, that year when we were in Sacramento. Yep. I mean, he was at some of the games and practices. But he was around off and on. He didn't live in Boston, but he was around off and on in Boston for activities or just to visit, come see Red and Casey. And so, you know, what an incredible person, incredible player, and really talk about, you know, some of the foundations of the NBA and making the Celtics, you know, the marquee team that they were. Bill was part of that. You know, who's got, I don't even have enough fingers. Who's got 11 championships, you know?
Right.
And so he was around, obviously. You know, one of the neat things we got through the Celtics in 2016, it was the 30th anniversary of the 86 team, the 86 championship, the 76 championship, and the 66 championship. So they had as many guys that could come up to the last game in the regular season for a couple of days before. And Bill Russell was there. He'd had a stroke or two before that. He was already in a wheelchair. But there's some amazing pictures that we had of, they honored us, recognized us at the game. And, you know, some guys who have passed since then, like John Havlicek and Sam right. Jones and Bill Russell and Tommy Heinsohn and JoJo White. So, and, you know, the most fun thing about that, we had a private dinner a couple nights before and another time where we got together with the sponsors and just sitting around with those guys and trading war stories and talking to them and hearing it. It was incredible. And so, you know, that was such a great part of that Celtic culture, was what Red had built, and, you know, as a coach and as general manager, and then Bill and a lot of those former Celtic guys were around or dropped in.
That's great. Let's pivot to your Orlando tenure, Greg. You spent 4 years in Orlando from 90 to 94. Was Orlando on your radar when the expansion team came on board in 89? Because you said your wife was from the Orlando area. Was that something that you had wanted to do as your career was kind of coming on the tail end?
Absolutely. So I, you know, after the Celtics, I got shipped out to the LA Clippers, and you talk about the top of the ladder to the bottom ladder as far as team. It was a great opportunity for me because I got to play more, a lot, start some and play a lot of minutes and developed better as a player, probably more established my value as a backup center. So it was about then, about 88 or so, when it was 87, when they first announced the franchise. And we would come to Orlando and spend part of, you know, the summer when I wasn't working out or going to summer league here in Orlando. And Jenny and the kids would stay here. And we said, hey, you know, the Magic, hey, they're coming. And it was first year, 89. And what a great, you know, it'd be awesome to play for them sometime. And then after the Clippers and a brief stint with the Hornets, I was a free agent. And I actually didn't sign with anybody during before the season and training camp went on. And then Dave Corzine hurt his knee the first game or two, went down. And then Terry Catledge had a broken thumb, I believe it was. And so Pat Williams called up my agent and talked to me. He said, hey, we want to sign you. The team's out in Golden State. This is near Thanksgiving by that time. So they're out in Golden State. They're playing Sacramento a day or two later. So we want you to jump on an airplane and go up, fly out there. You'll get a physical out there. Then you'll sign with, you know, we'll get the contract done. And so I was excited. Here, I'm going to play for the Magic. This is the first year, 89-90, and get to be, you know, a teammate with Jeff and Reggie Theus and all the guys who are on the team then. And so about and 2 hours later, I'm getting ready, packing, going to the airport. And Pat calls back and said, hey, I'm sorry to tell you, but they had Catledge's thumb reevaluated. He's going to be back in 3 or 4 weeks. And, you know, we love you, but the owners really don't want to, you know, and the team doesn't want to spend any more money right now signing anybody else. So we're going to have to, you know, negate the deal. And so, and we had been in touch with Sacramento. Sacramento was looking for a backup center. And so less than an hour later, we had a call through my agent, Bill Russell. They want to sign me. So I get back on I don't unpack my bags, and I'm on my way to Sacramento. And I get there whatever the day was, the day before the game or the day of the game. And I have a physical, and this is before cell phones and widespread email. And so I'm sitting there on the you know, not on the bench, but in the stands, like first row of the game, watching the Magic play the Kings, and Matt Gukas and I'm trying to think of the assistant coach, Brian Hill and
probably would have been Bobby Weiss,
So Bobby Weiss, they're thinking I'm there to come and join them and sign with them. And the word had gotten out a little bit to the media. So somebody from the media asked me, you know, well, are you here to sign with the Magic or the Kings? And I said, well, I'm going to see who's ahead at halftime and then sign with them. So, actually, that wasn't an option. But let's just say the Kings were ahead by one. And so I signed with the Kings and threw them the next year. And got to play with Danny again. For Danny Ainge was out there.
That's right.
Kenny Smith and Raymond Tisdale and Rodney McRae and Jerry Reynolds. Not that Jerry Reynolds played for the Magic, was our coach. And for a little while, then Dick Motta. Anyway, had a good year. You know, kind of helped me improve again, reestablish my value. Then the next year, the next summer, that the Magic had offered me a contract as a free agent. So I was able to sign the first year with the Magic. Came on and joined Jeff and Scott Skiles and Dennis and Nick and Otis Smith, Jerry Reynolds, those guys, Cat Leach. We really kind of had a lot of fun, and we really, Jeff, you remember, we kind of gelled about December or so, and we were pretty darn competitive. You know, I remember going on the road for a second year team and won back-to-back games and against really playoff teams, Phoenix and Golden State, and won stretch, and I think we won about 34, 35 games. And then, and so I was able to re-sign in with the Magic for 4 years. And after that, and, you know, started all 82 games that first year. And then we got a couple other big guys, started a lot of the games, but we had a bunch of injuries the next year. I remember one game, we had like seven guys, and they'd bring in Chris Cortiani and Stevie Thompson from the CBA just to have enough to meet the limit. And anyway, we ended up winning. We ended up winning just enough games to get Shaq. Okay, so then Shaq comes my third year, and they give him my starting job, and they've never given me an explanation why.
you demand a reason.
Anyway, you should. They should have explained that to you. That's all.
So can you guys check with Alex or some of the guys up there, but see what the deal was? So that's okay.
I've got over.
He turned out to be okay. He turned out to be not too bad. So I mean,
wasn't bad.
And Jeff will remember we're playing in the summer. You know, I don't know. We worked out with Shaq, but I remember sitting around with Maddie, and Maddie's going, Gukas is going, man, Shaq is, they'd seen him at LSU and seen him play in person. And Shaq is going, he's going, the closest thing I can compare him to is Wilt Chamberlain. Maddie had played with Wilt when Maddie was a rookie, and Wilt was about 27, 28. You know, so as far as a guy who's so big and powerful. And I recall even, I think it was when I was in Sacramento a year or two before, we had played a game in San Antonio, and at halftime, they honored the 4A state champion, San Antonio Cole High School. And there's this kid out there who's as big as all the NBA guys. And it was Shaq. That was the first time I saw him. But what an incredible, you know, difference he made. And then we're playing, remember playing in the summer, Jeff, and before the draft, and Penny Hardaway comes back for the second time, you know, second visit. And we scrimmaged together over this church gym over off of Mills. And we're going like, wow, you know, this is part two. If they get him, and you know, then the whole story was, you know, the Chris Webber for Penny trade. What an incredible, you know, infusion of talent. And talk about climbing the ladder, you know, rapidly and fast. So then I go and do the dumb thing that first year Penny has, and I do the Wally Pipp thing. You know, the Wally Pipp story where he sits and gets hurt and Lou Gehrig comes into place. I'm in a great position. I'm in my, you know, my early 30s, mid-30s, and I'm back up and play behind Shaq for 10 minutes a game, and the team's getting better. And once in a while, they'll let Jeff and I run a 4-5 pick and roll when during garbage time. And anyway, then I go get hurt in January. I hurt my Achilles of that second year and really never played. Got healthy during the summer, but never played for the Magic again. But I've loved it being here. I'd love to, you know, see what they did during that era. And you know, I've been here around Orlando for about 40 years now. So the Magic and Orlando are in my blood. So I'm excited to see what's going on now with this new young team.
You know what's crazy, Greg? You bring back so many memories talking about those times and everything. But for the people that are listening to this podcast and just like being around Orlando and becoming a major league, you know, a franchise, you know, a city really when the Magic came to town, I don't think, you know, people really can appreciate the energy in the old Amway Arena. You know, those early years, it was packed. It was so much fun. It was an event that everybody wanted to be a part of, even though we, you know, you mentioned that second year, we had it rolling a little bit. It was exciting, but even through wins and losses, it was really a great environment to play in, wasn't it?
It was, you know, and it was a great environment. It was the thing to do in town. It was a happening thing. And then, you know, then as we took off with Shaq and Penny joining the team, it was just, it was awesome. And I know they had the era with Dwight and Stan Van Gundy and getting to the finals back then. And nice thing, but hopefully we could recapture that in Orlando because it was a great, you know, Bear Bryant had a great quote that I always love. He said, you know, nobody ever rallied around a math class, you know, talking about, you know, colleges that, you know, you don't get excited about what's going on academically, but you get excited right. about the football team. And so what can a city rally around other than, and that's something like the Magic, a successful competitive sports team, you know, so it can be a great thing to bring people together. I mean, I ran basketball camps for years and here, back in the 80s, 90s. And, you know, when I was playing for the Magic, it was like, you know, kids were coming out of, you know, droves to, you know, to sign up and everybody had a, you know, so hopefully we can get that energy and excitement back, but it was a great time, Jeff. And that was a great place to play. And I was very happy to be a part of that.
Hey, last thing, Greg, and I think it'd be interesting for Magic fans to know what you're up to now, kind of get us all caught up. You know, George knows, Jeff knows, I know. Anytime we've ever asked anything of you, you've delivered. I mean, you're that kind of guy. You mean a lot to this community. You've given back an incredible amount. And I don't know how many people know all the things that you're doing here in Central Florida, and I think you should take the platform to do that and just know how much we all appreciate everything you've done here in Central
Absolutely.
Florida.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. I'll try to keep it brief. But first of all, first and most important thing is just family. We have an awesome family, wonderful family. Like I said, we've got deep Florida roots. We have a big family. Jenny, who's 5'10", and was a college basketball player, told me she wanted a big family. I thought she meant power forwards, tight ends, volleyball players, and supermodels. Now, I have some daughters that look like supermodels, but we ended up with 10 kids. And
that's amazing. I got two kids, and I have no idea what they're doing at any time.
Yes, and you have no brain cells. They start to deplete. So we're empty nesters now, so we're in recovery as far as the brain cells. But you know, a lot of people said, oh, we're going to be like, you're like Pat Williams. Well, we actually did. All of our children were adopted as infants. Just kind of the way that it worked out for our family. God worked the way God brought our children to our family. And now we have 19 grandkids going on 20. And the grandkids are a lot cheaper. So that's a good advice to give to you. But it also kind of led me to a couple of things that I'm doing. One thing back in the days when I was playing with the Magic, my wife Jenny had been involved in early childhood education and saw a need for some children, including a couple of ours, just kind of falling through the gaps and wanted to start a private school. And so we founded back in 1996 Pathways Private School. It's down in the Oak Ridge area. We have a nonprofit organization, the Gifted Learning Foundation, runs it. It's been going on for 27 years. They added high school grades a few years ago. So I helped them get high school sports started there. And now it's kind of, I was actually the athletic director for a while, but she fired me. My wife fired me. Her brother retired from college coaching, which was good. I didn't have time to schedule all that. So now I stay involved by helping the high school team. You know, I'm an assistant coach. I can get to most of the games. But full time, what I do, I'm in the financial business. I'm with Poly Wealth Management. I'm a senior wealth advisor there. We do wealth planning, financial planning. We do manage investments and assets for people. We do a holistic approach to people's, financial affairs, life focused. And part of what stirred me on with that, I would love to have stayed involved in basketball, and I do. you know, I would have loved to have been involved in college or pro basketball. I did coach for a while, but I had moved around so much. Jenny wasn't moving anymore. So, you know, the coaching ladder and stuff kind of takes you different places. So I did coach junior college here for a number of years back when Seminole State had basketball. But I always stayed involved in basketball. But also what I saw, and I actually started to get licensed and do an internship when I was playing back in Boston, was I loved helping people and being a money coach. And also I saw, hey, we got these 10 kids. I'm going, man, this NBA career is going to end. And we're going to have all these kids in college. We had 5 kids in college at one point. And I'm going, how are we going to pay for this? Still retire. So that's part of kind of what spurred me on to, among other things, I got licensed and gained a lot of experience about 16 years ago. So I spent full time doing that. So in fact, we got a little seminar for educational workshop over Wednesday College in Winter Park, teaching people about, you know, some of the ups and downs of retirement and planning for retirement. So
I love that. I think it's a great story. How can people help with Pathway School? Is there things that people can do to get involved or contribute, or what are some ways the community can kind of help out with that?
Sure. Like I said, we have a nonprofit that runs it called the Gift of Learning Foundation. Certainly people could donate. There may be opportunities for people to volunteer or mentor people, you know, some people in the community, maybe a guest speaker. We have it, you know, they're so busy doing what they do to run the business, and sometimes they don't have to, and to take care of all the kids, they don't have time. So if anybody would like to reach out and go to their website, it's Pathways, I should know the website, but you could Google it, pathwaysprivateschool.org, and they could look up and reach out and contact the school.
Excellent. Excellent. Good stuff, Greg. I appreciate it. We could do this for another hour, but I really appreciate you taking time to do this, and let us know when to come out to a game. And we want to see that golf game. I'm sure that golf game is on point. not as good as JT, but I'm sure it's on
point. It's gotten uglier and uglier. So I think I set the record at Aliquot. Scott Scales said for losing golf balls. So, but yeah, I'd love to play.
I was there.
Yeah, we can go to Top Golf sometime, and that way we can have some chicken wings while we hit a target.
Yes,
so
yes. And the next show is an hour. Yeah. The next show is at JT. The next time we catch up with Greg, can we do an hour on your guy Scott Skiles? Can we do an hour on that?
We could do that. Oh. There's a lot of Scott Skiles stories. I got one real quick question, real quick comment or story, real quick.
Yes. Yes.
So.
Yes.
You know, in today's NBA game, you know, one of the big things is, you know, people are fascinated with, and players have mastered the step back, right? The step back three or whatever that was. Listen, when Greg Kite was playing basketball, he had already mastered the step back, right?
Oh, okay.
But Greg, you know, in that Boston Celtic Larry Bird tradition, he had what he would call the step back patty whack, give a dog a bone, right? Like, no, it wasn't from 3 points. It was from the elbow, the step back. And he would let you know as soon as he released it that he was giving you the bone.
No, that's awesome.
Yes, indeed. G was the king of the trash talker.
And yeah, we had fun. So, yeah, the only thing that held me back, you know, was the guy over on the sideline with the tie on, the coach, you know. So it's like the old story. You know, who's the only person to hold Michael Jordan under 20 a game? Dean Smith. You know, Jordan averaged 19.8 or something, North Carolina. But no, yeah, it was a fun move. I'd love to do it. And actually kind of did learn it from some of the guys in Boston. They learned it from Terry Durod. And then Kiki Vandeweghe used to have a really good one. So spent a lot of time with Kiki anyway, it's a fun move, great move.
That's awesome.
Guys shooting the ball these days, they got step back patty whack plus more.
Exactly.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. All right, Greg, we appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you soon. That'll do it for this edition of Magic Pod Squad.